Welcome back to Living a Good Life. I'm your host, Brad Fain. This is part two of my conversation with former Prescott and Chino Valley City Council member, Arizona Senate President, and my friend, Karen Fan. Enjoy.
So let's move away from the local jurisdictions a little bit and talk about your time at the state. You were in the House and the Senate. What I'd really like to, I'm curious about, now that you're stepping away from it, where do you see, how do you see Arizona's position today, just as a healthy state, healthy economy, not talking left or right, just our state of being a state, and then where do you see us headed? You know, is our future bright? What are the concerns that you see that we need to be looking at as a voter up here in this market? What do I need to be paying attention for my state representatives?
Boy, that's a big question. It's a real big question. So for the last 8 years under Governor Ducey's leadership, we have always been a pro-business state. We have done so much of getting rid of red tape and bureaucracy to make Arizona a business-friendly place.
Is that a large part why we got that semiconductor that's in the North Valley?
Yeah. I mean, that's huge. 3,000 jobs. And think about what's going on over in Taiwan, because this is the company that's building it from Taiwan. If China takes over Taiwan, you can pretty well kiss away a lot of our chips goodbye, because China will now control the vast market. So this was their way of diversifying a little bit. Also, what people don't know is Taiwan is our number one trade partner. Did you know that in the world?
For Arizona?
Yeah.
No, I
they
did
buy
not know that.
Our aircraft, our planes, our helicopters. As I said, you know, we've got Intel, we've got all the great businesses here in Arizona. So, and we've just expanded so well with Intel and Apple and Amazon, everybody. It's just doing great.
We have a lot of businesses that are growing. Sometimes the news, because of how they're oriented, we only hear about the ones we lose. Mm-hmm. Like we didn't get Tesla's battery plant, but so much good has happened. So I'm glad you bring that up, because that doesn't seem to hit the headlines as much as the one we lost.
Right, exactly. Because there were, you know, there's a lot of good things going on that people don't hear about. So we've done a lot in 8 years as far as reciprocal agreements, that if you were a contractor in Washington and you want to come down here, you don't have to go through that whole waiting period, you know, 5 years to, you know, requalify to do this. We want you here. We want you working. The military, if you were good enough to drive a truck in the military, then you're good enough to drive it on our roads. You don't have to go through all the rigmarole. So there's so many things that we have done to make Arizona just this great business-friendly place. We believe in parental choice. We believe that parents should have the ability to decide what's best for their kids, particularly when it comes to education. Mm-hmm. And if you're not happy with a local public school, we believe that you should be able to take your tax dollars, because they're yours. Mm-hmm. They are not the state's. They are not anybody else's. Those are your tax dollars that have been set aside for educating your children. Now, the question is where do those dollars go? Do they go over to this school, or do you want them to go over to this school? Where is best for your kid to learn? And so, of course, we are big on ESAs. We're good, big on parental choice. We're big on our infrastructure. Let's talk about the infrastructure and the highways, and just trying to get people from one place to another safely, getting goods from one place to another. We actually go through arguments with our own Republican Party about revenues for the roads, you know. I got nailed big time because they want to renew that that 20-year quarter percent gas tax down in Maricopa County. And some of the more conservative groups said, no, you're not going to do that. Now, mind you, the only thing we were voting on is for it to go to the voters and let them decide for themselves.
Yeah.
But they didn't even want us. So it's a constant struggle, not just Democrats versus Republicans, but it's all over the place, you know, Dems against Dems, ours against ours, and everybody in between. What is tough right now is that we have a brand new governor, Governor Hobbs, who thinks totally opposite of what we've done for the last 8 years. We have a new Secretary of State, mm-hmm. who my inside sources say that he doesn't like our governor and he will be running against her. So this is going to be interesting to watch.
Secretary of State, which is the
second in command right now. Yeah. Now, mind you, this is the guy we weren't too happy with the Maricopa County elections in 2020 mm-hmm. either. And then we have a brand new AG, Chris mm-hmm. Mays, who was a Prescott girl,
yeah.
who used to be a Republican. Now she's a Democrat. And she's publicly stated, I'm not going to enforce all these laws. If I don't agree with it, I'm not going to do it. You know,
so kind of a California flavor, because we've heard that in California that they just don't enforce laws.
Right, exactly. And we have a newly elected AG that won by 200 and some votes that is already saying in the first 3 months in office is already saying, no, I'm not going to prosecute anybody that does that because it's against the law, but I don't believe in it, so I'm not going to do it.
Wow.
So we have our challenges.
And those are interesting times that I think are running across our entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're going to experience them firsthand here in Arizona, but those are issues that we see everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So
we have,
we're going to get more red tape? Do you think they're going to build up the bureaucracy again so it's harder for businesses to move here and thrive in Arizona?
Yes, absolutely, because that is their goal. They want to add the more red tape. They don't like the fact that we pulled back a lot of bureaucracy, so it is going to be higher taxes. They've already said that's what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have higher taxes. They're going to start reinstating more and more of the bureaucracy. And here's another thing that I wanted to jump in on, because it's kind of interesting, the correlation between the state and the local. Years ago, there's an organization called League of Cities and Towns that we've mm-hmm. all belonged to, and I've been a part of that for over 20 years. And it's all the mayor and council people and the staffs and we get together every year for a big annual conference, and then, of course, the board decides a lot of things. Now, when I was in politics, local politics, as Rowley and Harvey and everybody else was, we were smart enough to stay in our own lane. We were smart enough to know that a city or town council, our job was road, sewer, police, public safety, fire, local taxes, trash, water, sewer, all those things. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Planning and zoning, master plans, general plans. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Well, what we have seen over the last 10 years, and again, a lot of this was an influx of a lot of people coming from out of state, but particularly in the larger cities, Flagstaff, Phoenix, and Tucson. And now we are seeing it pop up in other cities as well now, where those councils are just saying, we don't like the state law, so we're just going to make up our own. So literally, and you're not going to see the media that's going to report much of this, but what you're seeing is, for example, in Flagstaff, a few years ago, they decided they were going to do their own minimum wage, their own benefits, yeah. their own this and that and the other, and they voted it in, and so Flagstaff has their own minimum wage. And I have fought so hard against that because as a business person that works all over the state of Arizona, mm-hmm. much less somebody that is out of state that has businesses here, if we have all 91 cities and towns, much less our 15 counties, if everybody has different minimum wages or benefit packages or days off or whatever, how does anybody do business in Arizona? If you are,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, impossible.
How do you do business if you are in Mesa and Tempe, and on this side there's a McDonald's here, and on this side there's a McDonald's here, but on this side this is what your pay is for the same exact job at McDonald's, and this is what your pay is over here. How do you even do that? How do you even, they don't even understand and realize that what they're doing is driving companies out of their city. So let's say here in Yavapai County, or let's say Flagstaff. When they do that kind of stuff in Flagstaff, businesses will literally pick up their businesses and move it across the county line.
Yep.
Because they can operate just as easily 2 miles down the road as they can right there. And guess what? Now they don't have to pay the city property taxes. They don't have to pay all those city things. So the city loses, and the businesses, now they've got the expense of having to move, but you forced them into doing it.
Yeah. It's a one-time expense versus an ongoing annual expense.
That's right. Now take that to another level is Now all of a sudden you have an uneven playing field, because let's say now you have a company in Flagstaff that decides to keep Flagstaff and they stay in Flagstaff and they are doing widgets, and this company over here is moved over here and doesn't have to comply with that extra 5% sales tax or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So now these people cannot compete equally, because these guys are always going to be 5% cheaper.
We're creating internal tariffs that we battle with at a national level.
Right.
But now we're creating, in a sense, a tariff in our own state.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, and so it doesn't just stop there. For example, we had to do a bill 4 years ago. City of Tucson, under the recommendations of one of their policy groups, they wanted to stop all natural gas in Tucson because of fracking. Now, we don't do fracking in Arizona, but because of fracking, no natural gas. So literally, we had to drop a bill very quickly. Speaker Bowers did one in the House. I did a mirror one in the Senate, so we could get it done as quickly as possible so that we could, and we put an emergency clause on it so the governor can sign it in 30 days, that said, no, you as a municipality do not have the right in any way whatsoever to stop natural gas. I mean, think about this. This is so ridiculous because it is such a big part of
our economy,
and just those are the crazy things going on right now.
Wow. So I guess it's legal for cities and towns to create their own laws. The Flagstaff did it with the minimum wage. Is there anything the state can do, or is that not in our best interest for the state to start overseeing small towns and cities that at that level? You start getting into the weeds a little bit as a state.
So, yeah, so we and the league and the cities hate the legislative body worse than anything for this, because a few years ago we passed a law that said that if you break our laws, if you just willy-nilly say, I'm not going to follow this law, we have the right, I'm trying to remember what the number is, 1487 or 1472, something like that. We have the right to stop your sales tax, your revenues, your state shared revenues. And we've had to do that a few times. We did that with Tucson, and we said, if you even think about going down this path, then we will be stopping your state shared revenues. And the cities and counties just hate that we do that. They want to get rid of that law so bad, and I keep telling those guys, I said, you know me, I'm a city girl, city and town, and I've always been on your side. And I said, but not on this one. I said, When our cities and towns can't stay in their own lane and they start making up their own laws and basically just telling the state legislature, sorry, we're not going to follow your rules, then it's become chaos. And I said, and I cannot believe that you as an organization are even allowing that to get on.
Wow. Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's really tough.
And, you know, it's a way of our life. And I know there's a lot of talk about the oil companies and how much profit they make, and we were having a discussion in our office, and I'm like, people, they point the blame in the wrong direction. And so, like, with the gas is just an example, but the oil, I can make a better analogy there. They get mad at the profits that the oil companies have, but all they're doing is filling a need I have, and you have, and everybody else in our community has, is I want to be able to hop in my car and drive across town or drive to work or go to Phoenix or wherever I want to go. But I need gas or diesel. And so the oil companies are just providing me what I want. So if I'm mad at their profits, I should be mad at myself, really, for demanding that the oil be at the gas pump so I could go fill up my car and go do whatever I want to do and not have restraint.
And the irony of that is why do they get to demand higher prices, which creates higher profits for them? It's the supply and demand, right? Mm-hmm. And so consequently, when we have a president that comes in and shuts down a major pipeline that was going to increase our supply and keep us less relied on outside countries, of which keeps us on our edge all the time at any given time, if we've got Saudi Arabia or Iran or Iraq or any of these other countries that we get oil from, they decide we're going to shut this down, where is America going to be?
Yeah.
So not only did they shut down our security for in the future, our economic security. But they actually drove the prices up even higher because now they shut down the supply.
Yeah.
So there's still only this much gas that's available for this many people. So the irony is the same people that are screaming and yelling about the big bad corporations that are making too much money, these are the same people that have shut down the supply, which allows these people
to raise price.
These companies to.
And they have to raise price to control the volume.
Right.
So they can, there's always fuel at the pump. And it's economics.
Yep. That's right.
It's amazing. So maybe some turbulent waters ahead for the state of Arizona, just depending on how far. And I know elected officials, they have their goals and their desires. And then there's, thank goodness, there's the House and the Senate and all these other bodies that get to weigh in. So we won't know how much she gets of her agenda approved. Anything else that you see on the horizon for Arizona that's a bright spot in our future?
Well, hopefully we can make some changes in the next election. For those that haven't been following politics closely, once again, the Republicans only hold their majorities by one person, one in the House, one in the Senate. And so consequently, that's the only thing right now that is, there are 31 Republican House members and 16 Senate Republican members. And that is what is the what is trying to stop Katie Hobbs from undoing everything we've done over the last 8 years. And those margins are just too tight. I will tell you, being Senate president the last 4 years and dealing with those tight margins, if you have one person that says, I'm not voting for this unless I get X,
it's miserable. They start loading them up.
It's miserable. Yeah.
Well, I'm hopeful that your tax analogy that you gave about raising taxes, I finally saw, like, it may mean nothing. It's just where my mind goes. There may be a chance in the future people start looking at it differently, because I finally saw a professional athlete that is, their contract's up. They spent 6 years in New York, and they're asking, well, where are you? You're in free agency. And they're like, where are you going to go? And he's like, well, certainly not in a state that takes half of my income. Mm-hmm. He goes, yes, I'm a highly paid individual, but I still have to give half of it to the state, and I'm tired. And so I'm only going to look at those teams that are in low-taxing states. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an insignificant in the big picture, but because they're an athlete / celebrity, I'm hoping people will hear the message. Because when you say it or I say it, people are like, oh, they're just greedy business people or politicians, and they don't. But when an athlete says it, it's like, wait a minute, we're going to lose our favorite star athlete or our favorite celebrity because our state taxes too much. Maybe people will start to wake up and say, maybe this isn't the best thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful the individual said it, because he got in the headlines, and it was like, good for him.
Hopefully there will be some more following suit.
I hope so. And, you know, it doesn't put Arizona in a good spot for our sports teams, because we're in the middle. We're not the worst taxing states, but we could do better. So we've talked about local. We've talked about the state. What's next for Karen Fan?
I have no idea.
Other than a break, we know that like this year is going to be just kind of resetting the clock a little bit and taking some well-deserved time. But anything you want to do in the future? Anything?
I don't know. You know, I've had a lot of people ask, to do various things. And I've just basically said, I'm not even in a position to even make any decisions right now. We were joking before we started this podcast. Mm-hmm. We were joking a little bit. And I said, one thing I could do is move to Prescott Valley and run for the Prescott Valley Council, and then I could hit the trifecta and actually probably be the only person in history of ever to have served on all three councils here. Of course, then Dewey's going to say, how about us too? But that was more in joking. I've had people that have asked if I would consider running for Board of Supervisors in the future. Secretary of State. I mean, there's a lot out there right now, but I've just said I need this year
to decompress
and take a break. And it was Yeah, these last 4 years being Senate president was very tough, a lot of tough challenges dealing with what we did. And, of course, the election stuff, you know, not to go into too deep into that sort of thing. You know, and to this day, you know, people say, do you regret doing the audit? And I'm going, no, if the public only knew half of what I know. But unfortunately, we can't get the media to get the truth out on some things. And they don't realize that the whole purpose, because it's gotten strayed so far.
Yeah.
And even now, it's like going, boy, am I glad I'm not down at the Capitol right now, because there's some pretty crazy stuff going on in those election committees that, as Senate president, I never would have allowed that to happen, ever. Wow. I mean, we don't, you know, you don't do that. Mm-hmm. And so, not that I'm digging anybody, I'm just saying that somebody needs to get back to some basic decorum down there in some of these committees. But the point is that, you know, the whole reason why we did that was, we have voters. 46% of the people said they had serious questions about our elections. Are we following the rules? Mm-hmm. Are we following our... That's all they wanted to know. And when you have Board of Supervisors in Maricopa said, pat you on the head and tell you to shut down, sit down and shut up, we're not going to answer your questions, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So do I regret doing that? Absolutely not, because the whole reason why we did it is to get some answers. Are we following our laws? Mm-hmm. And we found out we weren't. And so at the very least, I am telling you, this last election still had some problems, but it was 100 times better than it was the previous election, because they know everybody's watching now. Okay. They know that everybody is, if they see something, they're going to say something. Sometimes they're saying things that they shouldn't have been saying, but so all in all, it was, I think in the long run, you're going to see that our elections are going to be much more secure, because people are now not taking it so haphazardly.
Well, good. That's a good outcome.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, because elections are always upon us. So Prescott's on the anniversary of another election. They have an unusual, but they have five council members and a mayor up for election. And then Prescott Valley will be the year following. So not R's and D's. If you were to give advice to the voters, what kind of character or what would you look for in an individual that wants to be on council and be a leader of their community?
Okay, first and foremost, I am going to say the words that Brad Newman told me many years ago. God bless him.
Yeah.
He said, Karen, always be true to yourself.
Okay.
And that goes back to some of the things we were talking about, is that first and foremost, if you're going to run, you're not doing it for your 15 minutes of fame. You're not doing it for a title. You're not doing it because it's your turn.
Mm-hmm.
You do it because you're willing to give everything for it. And I'm telling you, you sacrifice to serve. It means giving up family dinners. It means having to put up with those phone calls in the middle of the night. It means a lot of things. But for those people that believe in their heart that they really want to be a part of something, they really want to. I've always said, you know, if you're going to live on this earth, when you leave, you better have accomplished something. You better have said at your funeral, somebody says, that person made a difference, whatever that is. And when it comes to politics, that's exactly the way that should be. If you're going to get involved, you run because you believe in doing something for your community and you're doing something for your people. You are willing to step out and make sure you do your homework and you listen and you understand the issues. And then you try and work on something that is, whether it's a consensus. I mean, it's always great to come to a consensus, because generally if people are reasonable, there's always some give and take.
Yeah.
And there's always some way to make it something that some people think is bad to say, actually, this isn't so bad if we're willing to trade and do this or whatever. And then stick to it. Don't be wishy-washy. Don't say you're going to do something or campaign one way and then all of a sudden you get elected or you walk into the meeting and because somebody has threatened you or bullied you that you're going, you know, then all of a sudden you switch your vote. Don't do it.
So as a voter, we need to pay attention to the candidates and ask those questions to make sure they're being true to their cause for running.
First and foremost is that the voters need to pay attention. I can't believe how many people do not vote in local elections.
Yeah.
Or they don't do their homework. So they have no idea who the candidates are. Mm-hmm. So it's very important for them to not only, whether it's watching a podcast, reading a paper, going to meetings, going to forums, being able to hear the candidates for themselves and listen and ask those in questions to them and hold their feet to it. Ask them those tough questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, thank you, Karen. I really appreciate you coming on. I know you're busy, so it's just great at timing to get you here as you're stepping off as president of the Senate. And we wish you well in the future. And you have my vote. No, I don't get to vote in any of the cities. I live in the county. So you would have my vote if I could vote if you ran in Prescott Valley.
Well, but, thank
so thank you very much. Really
thank
appreciate
you very
it.
Thank much. You so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you again, Karen, and thank you all for listening to this episode of Living a Good Life. I'm your host, Brad Fain. Until we see you again next time.